Tonight I'd like to study Isaiah chapter 24 with you. I'm always saying this is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, whatever I'm studying, but this really is a good one. This is a super good chapter. It's got all kinds of elements in it that take us right down to the end of the world. And Isaiah chapter 24. We're going to tie it into Revelation tonight and several other places in the Bible. It's just a really good chapter. As we get down into it a little ways, we're going to see that you can prove to people here why people are going to be punished in the end. It gives some real details as to why the Lord is offended and what he's going to do. Isaiah 24, chapter 24 and verse 1 says, "Behold, the Lord maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof." Now, has he ever made it empty, made it waste? That's never happened yet. I believe it's going to happen in the last 3.5 years of our Earth's history. I believe, according to Revelation chapter 11, that it's not going to rain for the last 3.5 years. We're told that the Elijah message will be given at the end, and in Elijah's day, the people had gotten so steeped in idolatry that the only way God could get their attention was for them to be hungry. And I believe we're in that very condition here on earth today. People can go out and preach and do all kinds of things, but you can't really get the people's attention. As long as the fridge is full and they got hot dogs and beer for Sunday for the football game and stuff, you know, it amazes me. They'll pack a football stadium, 70,000 people, and they can sit in line 2 or 3 hours in their car just to get in, and 2 or 3 hours in their car to leave, and get a terrible sunburn and everything else. And you could have church there at the same place the next day, and you wouldn't have any trouble finding a parking spot. So I believe that God is going to make the earth empty and waste at the end of time. In fact, there's quite a few places in the Minor Prophets where it talks about all the grass being burned up. It says everything's burned up. The green grass is all consumed. So here at the end, when he takes away the rain, he is going to make the earth waste. He did it in the Old Testament times, and he's going to do it at the end, I believe.
So in the last 3.5 years before he comes, there'll be no rain?
That's what I believe. Says in Revelation chapter 11 that the last 1260 days the heavens will be shut and it will not rain during that period of time. One of these nights we'll actually study that, but it's very clear there, and that's a little hard for us to believe today, but if you look around us, we need something like that to get people's attention, you know. God wants to get everyone's attention. He has to before the end, so they have to make a decision one way or the other. And so he wants them to have a chance to make an intelligent decision. And if you go through the Old Testament, you'll find many places where it talks about God says he would give them cleanness of teeth. And when he says cleanness of teeth, he's meaning you won't have anything to eat. And he did that a lot of times. He took away the food. When there's no food, people turn back to God. It's kind of like our country today. We just have to, in the summertime here, when it doesn't rain for about a month or two, the churches are full of people out here in the farm belt. They're all going to church hoping that it'll rain, you know, and when it starts raining and gets good again, it kind of thins out again, you know. So it's proven that that does get people's attention. Verse 2 continues on. It says, "And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury to him." Chapter 24 and verse 2 there encompasses every single person. You're either part of the congregation or you're the priest. You're either the servant or the master, the maid or the mistress, the buyer or the seller, the lender or the borrower. Everybody fits into those things. And it's saying it's going to be the same for everyone at the end. Now we know that God's people are going to be blessed a certain amount during this time, but what it's saying is that this calamity at the end is going to affect every man, woman, and child here on planet Earth. Verse 3 continues on. It says, "The land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Lord hath spoken this word." The land will be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled. Well, that's never happened yet, because all over the earth, you know, we may have a calamity here or there, but there's all kinds of other places where it's lush and green and beautiful, and the earth certainly hasn't been utterly emptied or utterly spoiled. Verse 4 continues on and says, "The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The world languisheth and fadeth away. The haughty people of the earth do languish." Says even the high ups, the rich men, are going to be languishing at this time. It's going to be a really bad time. The earth is mourning, the world is languishing and fadeth away. That's kind of how it is when it doesn't rain. It just keeps fading away. It gets drier and drier and drier. Verse 5 is a very important verse. It says, "The earth also is defiled." Now that word defiled means morally corrupted, if you look it up in the Strong's Concordance. "The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof," and now it's going to tell us why, "because they have transgressed the laws." And if you look up the word laws there, it is the Hebrew word Torah. And the Torah, it tells in the Strong's Concordance, is actually the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue. That's its special meaning. So it says, "The earth is defiled under the inhabitants thereof because they have transgressed the Ten Commandments," you could say. Now this next part's very interesting. It says, "They changed the ordinance." And when you look up the word ordinance in the Bible there, in fact, I was going to read that one to you because it's so interesting. The word ordinance there, one of its meanings is the set time. That's actually what it means, the set time. So it's actually saying they've transgressed the Ten Commandments. They've tried to change the set time. They changed Sabbath to Sunday. We know they've done these things. The word ordinance in that verse is the Hebrew word 2706. And the word in Hebrew is pronounced kok. And its meaning is an enactment, hence an appointment of time, a portion or a set time. That's exactly what the word means. It means it's an enactment or an appointment of time. And that's exactly what the Sabbath is. It's an appointment of time. It's an enactment because God enacted it. He made the seventh day, and then he blessed the seventh day, and he commanded everybody to keep it. So this is saying that they have transgressed the Ten Commandments, they've changed the set time, and they have broken the everlasting covenant. And I want to go several places with you tonight and read about the everlasting covenant, because some people think it's just a promise God made. First place, let's turn back to Psalms 105. Keep your place here in Isaiah, because we are coming back. But in Psalms chapter 105, we're going to begin in verse 6. Psalms 105 and verse 6. It says, "O ye seed of Abraham his servant, ye children of Jacob his chosen, he is the Lord our God, his judgments are in all the earth. He hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to a thousand generations." I want to take just a second there, because it says he commanded it to a thousand generations. And if you go back in the New Testament in the genealogies of Jesus and count them back, Luke actually tells us Jesus' generation, and he counts them all the way to Adam, and it's only 70-some generations. And he tracks it all the way from Jesus' day to Adam's day, 70-some generations. And if a generation is the age you are when you have your first child, if we said it was 20 years old, we've had 2,000 years since Jesus' time, so that'd be about another 100 generations. So there's no way we've had more than 200 generations of people live on planet Earth. And it says here in Psalms 105, verse 9, or verse 8, "He hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to a thousand generations. Which covenant he made with Abraham, and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant." So the law that Yahweh gave us is his everlasting covenant. He made it with Abraham. It says that Abraham kept his laws and things. We're told that in Genesis. He made it with him, and it's passed down. And by keeping his law, we re-ratify the covenant with him and we put ourselves in covenant relationship with him. Now the next place I'd like to go read a little bit is, let's go to Exodus in chapter 31. Exodus chapter 31. We'll begin there in verse 12. It says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses," Exodus 31 verse 12, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbaths ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you." It says there it's a sign between me and you throughout your generations. So in other words, that means it's going to be a sign forever down through your lineage. Verse 14, he says, "Ye shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defileth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death." And notice this in the next verse carefully. Verse 16. "Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations, for a perpetual covenant." A perpetual is something that continues on and on and on. It perpetuates itself. So the longer we keep the Sabbath, it's the perpetual covenant. If we're keeping the Sabbath, we're still in covenant with God. If we quit keeping it, we've broken the covenant. Then in verse 17, he says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever." It's a sign between God and us forever. And of course, we know that we're supposed to be spiritual Israel. Paul says we're grafted in. We've become spiritual Israel. It's a sign between spiritual Israel and God forever. "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And he gave unto Moses, when he had made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai, 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone, written with the finger of God." So just before he handed Moses the Ten Commandments, he went back over the Sabbath day with him again, just to make sure he had it clear and to make sure he knew exactly what it was. Now the next place I want to read with you is back in the book of Isaiah, and it's chapter 56. Isaiah chapter 56. In this chapter we're going to see that he calls the Sabbath his covenant a whole bunch of times. And he ratifies the fact here that this Sabbath is going to be kept by all kinds of people. And he tells us that by beginning to keep his Sabbath, we take hold of his covenant. In other words, we make an agreement with him. Because every time we rest from our work on the seventh day, we're saying, "I believe that Yahweh is up there in heaven and that he made the Sabbath day." That's the only reason we stop on the Sabbath. When heaven looks down and they see people that don't stop, they say, "Those people don't recognize the Creator." But when we do, we're ratifying our covenant. We're saying we're ceased from our works today, just like you ceased from yours, and we believe you're up there and you're going to bless us. Isaiah 56, in verse 1, it says, "Thus saith the Lord, Keep ye judgment and do justice, for my salvation is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed." So he says, keep judgment and do justice. That means keep the laws, obey, be right. "For my salvation is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the man that doeth this, and the son of man that layeth hold on it, that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it, and keepeth his hand from doing any evil." Verse 3, "Neither let the son of the stranger that hath joined himself to the Lord." So now we're talking about the son of the stranger. This isn't an Israelite. This is a Gentile. It says, "Neither let the son of the stranger that hath joined himself to the Lord speak, saying, The Lord hath utterly separated me from his people. Neither let the eunuch say, Behold, I am a dry tree." So he's talking to the strangers here and the eunuchs. And of course, the eunuchs were men who had been castrated. They couldn't have any family or anything, and they were looked at as the lowest people. So he actually speaks to them directly. So if there's anyone out there who feels like they're the lowest person, they can realize that God's speaking to him directly. He says, "Don't let them say I'm a dry tree. Verse 4, he says, "For thus saith the Lord unto the eunuchs that keep my Sabbaths, and choose the things that please me, and take hold of my covenant." So you see there, he says, the eunuch who keeps my Sabbath, chooses the things that please me, and take hold of my covenant. That's how we take hold of his covenant. "Even unto them will I give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than of sons and of daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off." So he tells us there that no matter where we start, if we come into covenant relationship with him by obeying him and keeping his Sabbath day, he will give us a place within his walls and a name better than of sons and of daughters. He'll give us an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. And of course, in Revelation it says that to the overcomers he's going to give that new stone, and it's got your new name written in it that no one knows but you. I believe that's your everlasting name. Verse 6, he continues on. He's really emphasizing this, you notice. Verse 6, he says, "Also the sons of the stranger that join themselves to the Lord to serve him and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it and taketh hold of my covenant." So once again, he's reiterating, they've got to keep the Sabbath, and that's how they're taking hold of my covenant. Verse 7, "Even them will I bring to my holy mountain, and will make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon my altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all people." This prophecy, or this promise, was given a long time ago, and in that day they still had the sacrifices there at Jerusalem, but it points far forward into the future. Verse 8, "The Lord God which gathereth the outcasts of Israel saith, yet will I gather others to him besides those that are gathered unto him." So he's saying, besides the children of Israel, I'll gather many others, and that's the Gentiles. That's us. So in this chapter, we've seen that no less than three or four times he's said to different groups of people, if you'll keep my Sabbath, you'll come into covenant relationship with me, and you'll be my people. Over and over and over, he reiterates that. Now let's turn back to Isaiah 24, and we'll keep going there. Which one?
20.
We can do that. Let's read Ezekiel 20. And we could start in verse 11, actually. Ezekiel 20 and verse 11, God says, "I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctifieth them." And verse 19 says, "I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them. And hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that ye may know that I am the Lord your God." Very good verses. We have to keep his Sabbath day to enter into that covenant relationship with him. Now let's turn back to Isaiah chapter 24. And we're going to kind of go through verse 5 again. We'll just read it again. We've been breaking it down, but we want to make sure we get the full impact now that we understand what all the segments of it mean. Isaiah chapter 24 and verse 5. "The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof, because they've transgressed the laws," or the Ten Commandments. "They've changed the ordinance," and we read how that's the set time, the Sabbath. They've tried to change the set time from Saturday to Sunday, and they've broken the everlasting covenant. And we just read where his commandments, and especially the Sabbath, are the everlasting covenant. But now the proof of this is verse 6. Look what it says. "Therefore," in other words, because of what happened in verse 5, "therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left." if you only had two verses in the whole Bible to tell them why they're going to get punished at the end, those two right there demonstrate it perfectly. They've transgressed his Ten Commandments, tried to change his set time from Saturday to Sunday. They've broken his everlasting covenant. And therefore, has the curse devoured the earth, they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore, the inhabitants of the earth are burned and few men left. That's clearly summing up what's going to happen to us there at the end. And I believe that these two verses are the key to understanding what the abomination of desolation is. The abomination of desolation is the abomination that maketh desolate. That's really how it's interpreted. And Sunday keeping is an abomination. It said, in fact, let's read that real quick. Ezekiel chapter 8. Let's turn over there. Keep your place here because we're coming right back. Ezekiel chapter 8. And we'll begin in verse 15. Ezekiel 8 and verse 15. The prophet Ezekiel is having a vision here, and God kept telling him, turn around and I'm going to show you something even worse they're doing. And then he says, turn around and I'll show you a greater abomination that they're doing. And finally he gets down to verse 15. And it's interesting that this is the last abomination that he shows him, so it must be the worst one, because he kept saying, turn around, I'm going to show you a greater one. Turn around, I'm going to show you a greater one. Ezekiel chapter 8, beginning in verse 15, then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. So he says, turn around, I'm going to show you a greater abomination. So now notice that what he's going to see here is an abomination. Verse 16, and he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house. And behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men, with their backs towards the temple of the Lord, and their faces towards the east, and they worshiped the sun towards the east. So these men were worshiping the sun, and God said it was a terrible abomination. It's interesting to note while we're on this verse that you notice it says there's 25 men there. These were actually the priests at the temple, because the common man didn't go between the porch and the altar. You brought your stuff into the altar, you sacrificed it, and the priests are the one that took it in. And if you remember in the book of Revelation, there's 24 elders gathered around the throne, and God Almighty is on the throne. There's 25. And not priests always worked at the temple in groups of 25. There was a presiding priest, and he had 24 to help him. And that's what the pattern of the 24 elders and God in heaven is. So these were actually the priests, and it says they had their backs towards the temple of the Lord and their faces towards the east, and they worshiped the sun towards the east. And of course, the sun is what the day Sunday was named after. It was the day that the pagans worshiped the sun god, and they worshiped him on that day. Verse 17, God continues, it says, then he said unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they fill the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose. Therefore will I also deal in fury. Mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in my ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. I don't want God to ever say that about me. He's going to have to deal with them in fury. His eye's not going to spare. And though they cry with a loud voice, he's not going to hear them. He talked to them a long time before he punished them. And he's been talking to our earth for a long time about the Sabbath and these things. Now let's turn back to Isaiah chapter 24. We'll read that verse 6 one more time. Therefore, or because of these things, the breaking of the Ten Commandments, the changing of the Sabbath to Sunday, and breaking the everlasting covenant. Verse 6, therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. So he takes us down to the history there of what's going to happen to the people and why it's going to happen to them. Then he jumps back a little bit here in time to show us some other events, and we want to go on there. Verse 7, it says, the new wine mourneth, the vine languisheth. Why is the vine languishing? Because there's no rain. All the merry-hearted do sigh. The happy people, they're not so happy now. The wine is mourning and the vines are languishing. Verse 8 says, the mirth of Tabret ceaseth. The noise of them that rejoice endeth. The joy of the harp ceaseth. Happiness is going to be gone from our earth here at the end. People are going to be wondering what's happening. Verse 9 says, they shall not drink wine with a song. Strong drink should be bitter to them that drink it. In other words, they can drink their alcohol, but it's not going to erase from their mind the worry about what's going on. Verse 10 says, the city of confusion is broken down. Of course, in the book of Revelation, it tells us the great city's broken up into three pieces. It's talking about the very end here. Verse 10, it says, the city of confusion is broken down. Babylon's the city of confusion. Spiritual Babylon is Rome. Verse 10, the city of confusion is broken down. Every house is shut up that no man may come in. There is a crying for wine in the streets. All joy is darkened. The mirth of the land is gone. In other words, all joy in the land is gone at this time. Verse 12, in the city is left desolation. Of course, that's why we're told to get out of the cities. In the city is left desolation, and the gate is smitten with destruction. In other words, they can't protect their cities. Almost like we're seeing today, we can't protect the big cities. Now, verse 13 tells us, when thus it shall be in the midst of the land among the people. So it says when it's in that condition, all these bad things are happening. When thus it shall be in the midst of the land among the people, there shall be as the shaking of an olive tree and as the gleaning grapes when the vintage is done. So what it's saying there is it's going to be amongst the people like a shaking of an olive tree. And they would shake the olive tree, but there'd be a few berries up there in the top that they couldn't shake out. And this is representing the end because it's going to be like the shaking has occurred. Most everybody has fallen. There's just a few hanging on here and a few hanging on there. And it says in verse 14, they, speaking of those gleaning grapes, after they picked the grapes, there was just a few grapes left, and those were called the gleaning grapes, just like there was a few olives left in the upper boughs of the olive tree. It says that is going to be the condition here. Everything's been shaken. And, you know, the New Testament is quoted for us, and it actually tells us that one more time God has said he'll shake everything so that that which can't be shaken will be made manifest. They're actually getting it from this verse right here. It's saying God's going to shake everything so what can't be shaken will be manifested or proven that it cannot be shaken. And it continues on in verse 14, and it's speaking about God's people. It says, they shall lift up their voice. Now, grapes can't sing, and olive berries can't sing, but it's representing God's people because they're what's left there at the end. And it says, they shall lift up their voice. They shall sing for the majesty of Yahweh. They shall cry aloud from the sea. You see, when it gets down here to the end, and God actually shuts it down, and we see him bring these people down and all these things that have been going on, we're actually going to sing. We're going to be happy to see it's over with. God's people are going to be shouting for joy as they see that. And it says in verse 15, they're saying, wherefore glorify ye the Lord in the fires, the King James says, but if you look, if your Bible has a note on that, the word fires there is really supposed to be translated valleys. Wherefore glorify ye the Lord in the valleys, even the name of the Lord God of Israel in the isles of the sea. So it tells us there that we're supposed to be glorifying God's name. Not just God, but glorifying his name as we come down there to the end. Then he tells us in verse 16, from the uttermost part of the earth have we heard songs. You know why it's the uttermost part of the earth? Because God's people have fled as far as they can get. From the uttermost part of the earth have we heard songs, even glory to the righteous. But I said, my leanness, woe unto me. The treacherous dealers have dealt treacherously. Yea, the treacherous dealers have dealt very treacherously. So at that time, the wicked are actually going to realize that the righteous are saved and they are lost, and they're actually saying, glory to the righteous. But they're saying of themselves, my leanness. Leanness is a sign of bad times or bad situations. So they're saying, my leanness, woe unto me. The treacherous dealers have dealt treacherously. Yea, the treacherous dealers have dealt very treacherously. Now, we got to think about that a minute. We've studied before. The dealers, that's like a person that's dealing in something. So if we're dealing in religion, what's it talking about? It's saying that the priests and the preachers have dealt very treacherously with them. And you see, it is very treacherous today for these people to stand up and tell the people, well, it really doesn't matter what day you keep. It doesn't matter. You know, if you're going to make it either way. It's treachery. They've done a switch on them. And I've tried lots of ways to think about this, you know, how to explain it. But the best way I can think of is, you know, it's really like if you came to buy a car and they showed you this beautiful car out here and it had 30,000 miles on it, and you decided to buy that car. And you came back the next day and you bought the white car that was sitting right there in the spot, and it looked just like the same car. And as you got home, maybe you drove it for a week or so, and you look down at your speedometer, and you realize, well, this car's got 180,000 miles on it. And you realize that while you went to the bank to get your money, they parked a different car in the spot. That's really what they've done to people. This is treachery, what's going on here. And it's saying they've done a switch upon them. They've dealt treacherously. Yea, the treacherous dealers have dealt very treacherously. So they've deceived the people, and we see it going on all around us today. But it continues, and we know that it's going to continue to the very end. But this is describing the end and how these things are going to come to pass as we move down to that time. I want to read one other place for you in Isaiah chapter 17. Keep your place in 24 because we're coming right back. 17 and beginning in verse 4. Isaiah 17 and verse 4. It says, in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall be made thin, and the fatness of his flesh shall wax lean. Why is it becoming thin, and why is his flesh waxing lean? There's not going to be a lot of food there at the end. Verse 5, it shall be as when the harvestman gathereth the corn and reapeth the ears with his arm. See it saying there, instead of taking his wagon out into the field, he just does it with his arm. You ever see somebody picking ears of corn, they just stack them on their arm? You know, no need to take the wagon out there because there's not that much to get. And it shall be as he that gathereth ears in the valley of Rephaim. Yet gleaning grapes shall be left in it, as the shaking of an olive tree. Two or three berries in the top of the uppermost bough. Four or five in the outmost fruitful branch thereof, saith the Lord of hosts. At that day shall a man look to his Maker, and his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel. So it's saying in that day they will really look back to God. Down in verse 12 it says, woe to the multitude of many people which make a noise like the noise of the seas, and to the rushing of the nations that make a rushing like the rushing of mighty waters. The nations shall rush like the rushing of many waters, but God shall rebuke them, and they shall flee far off, and they shall be chased as the chaff of the mountains before the wind, and like a rolling thing before the whirlwind, or like a tumbleweed. Verse 14, and behold, at eventide trouble, and before the morning he is not. This is the portion of them that rob us, and the lot of them that spoil us. So it says there at the end, it's talking about people especially, crops also, but it's saying there'll be just a few left, two or three berries in the top of the uppermost bough, four or five in the outmost fruitful branch. It's just going to be a few people left hanging on at this time as we get down to the end. Now as we go back to Isaiah chapter 24, we continue on there in verse 17. They've just said in verse 16 that the treacherous dealers have dealt treacherously to them. And it says they're singing to the righteous and saying, glory to the righteous. Verse 17, it says, fear in the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant of the earth. And it shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. And he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. So what he's describing there is that you can't get away from the trouble. If you're running from the noise of the fear, you're going to fall in the pit. And if you happen to climb up out of the pit, you're going to be taken in the snare. A snare is like a device where they put something to grab a leg, you know. It's like a rope that grabs you. So it's saying that the fear in the pit and the snare upon the inhabitants of the earth. Verse 18 says, it shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit, and he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. Now notice what it says. For the windows from on high are open. Isaiah actually saw what's described in Revelation for us when the heavens roll back like a scroll. He says the people are going to be terrified. They're running from the noise of the fear. They're falling into the pit. In other words, there's a snare upon them. They can't get away from it. This next area as we go through, actually I want you to keep your hands in two places in your Bible. Keep that place marked there. And I want you to also be in Revelation chapter 6. And we're going to begin there in verse 12. And we're going to read this together and see how it fits together. Because Isaiah saw the very same thing that John the Revelator recorded for us. Isaiah said, the windows from on high are open. That's how he described looking up into heaven and seeing the glory of Yahweh. Revelation chapter 6 and verse 12, it says, I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Now verse 14 is what we came to read. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? So it told us there in verse 14 that the heaven departs like a scroll when it's rolled together. Now keep your place there, but let's turn back to Isaiah 24 and read that verse again. Verse 18. We really only need to read the second part of the verse. If you look down in there, it says, for the windows from on high are open, and the foundations of the earth do shake. Now, the second thing we've already established, that's the rolling back of the heavens, is the windows from on high being open. The next thing Isaiah says at the end of verse 18 is, the foundations of the earth do shake. Now we want to read verse 19 and see, because Isaiah spends a lot of time on how bad this earthquake's going to be. Verse 19, he says, the earth is utterly broken down. The earth is clean dissolved. The earth is moved exceedingly. How do you like that for a description? That doesn't sound like the other earthquake in Isaiah where he talks about the earthquake in the days of Uzziah the king. Now this is going to be the real big one at the end. It says in 19, the earth is utterly broken down. The earth is clean dissolved. Think about that. Clean dissolved. The earth is moved exceedingly. Now, keep your place there, but let's flip back to Revelation and read there one more time. In verse 14, Revelation 6 and verse 14, it says, the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, And then what's it say? And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. When the mountains and the islands are moved out of their places, this is the final big earthquake. These men are both describing the same thing. Now let's turn over to Revelation chapter 16 and read what it says over there. Revelation 16 and verse 17 is where we'll begin. Revelation 16 and verse 17. It says, the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake. Listen to that. There was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of her wrath. Now verse 20, look what it says. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. So Revelation 6 and 16 described to us this last earthquake, and it says everything's moved out of their places. The mountains aren't found. There's not going to be a place to hide. I don't know if you've ever seen them when they vibrate concrete. They pour new concrete out there, and they've got it all laying there, and it'll have rocks sticking up out of it, and it's got air down in it because it came out of the truck. And when they actually put a vibrator down in there and they shake it, everything just settles down instantly, and the top of it's just as smooth as glass. And so when God really shakes the earth, the mountains are going to sink right back in. They're going right down in there when he really shakes it up. The weight of them is just going to go right down in there. It's all going to be level. He's showing up to meet everybody. Right out there in the middle of it, surviving perfectly well, because it says his angels will have charge over us at that time. See, think about it. Would it give God greater honor if he took us out of here before he did it, or if he protected us right out there as he's doing it? In fact, that's really what, and if we have a few minutes here, we're getting down to the end of Isaiah 24. We'll go back and read it. But in fact, you know, we can take a minute right now. Let's go to Psalms 91 and read it. A lot of people don't realize what Psalms 91 is actually talking about. It has some beautiful verses in there, but it's talking about this very time. There at the end when everything is going on. Psalms 91 and verse 1, it says, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. The secret place of the Most High is where God's going to hide his people and take care of them there at the very end. Verse 2, I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in him will I trust. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler. Now remember, we just read in Isaiah 24, it said, the fear in the pit and the snare are upon the people of the earth. It says here he's going to deliver us from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. Verse 4, he shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. So what's really going to protect us? God's truth, the fact that we've kept his Ten Commandments. That's actually what's going to protect us. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day. There at the end, it's just trouble all the time. Verse 6, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Now that verse has never, ever, 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 ever been fulfilled. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. That's 11,000 people being destroyed right around you. And at the end, when God is pounding the earth with the seven last plagues, his people are going to stand here through it, and they're going to see thousands and thousands go down around them. But only with our eyeball where we see the reward of the wicked. We see what they got for breaking his law and doing what they did. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Verse 9, because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. That's the seven last plagues. It says the evil won't befall us, and none of those plagues at the end, the seven last plagues, will come and get us. Only with our eyes will we see it as the wicked get it. Verse 11, for he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. At the end, God's going to give his angels charge over his people because he says, that one over there is saved. Take care of them. And this one, take care of that one, and take care of that one. And they're going to be protected as this comes on at the end. Verse 13, thou shalt tread upon the lion and adder. The young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample under feet. In other words, nothing's going to hurt them at this point in time because the final sealing's taken place. God's people have been sealed, and the rest of the people have been sealed for destruction, and God's people won't be harmed anymore. Verse 14, because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high. Notice this. I love this part. I will set him on high because he hath known my name. Because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. This is the time of trouble. He's saying he'll be with us in the time of trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. We're going to be shown his salvation because we're going to stand here and see it when it comes. That chapter is all about the time of the end. And it's all about us standing right there in the midst of the wicked and seeing 11,000 of them cut down. And that's just a proverbial number. It might be 100,000. But only with your eyes will you see their reward as long as we've done what's right. Now let's turn back over to chapter 24 of Isaiah. We'll start there in verse 19 again. Isaiah 24:19. The earth is utterly broken down. The earth is clean dissolved. The earth is moved exceedingly. We already talked about it. It's dissolved. It's moved exceedingly. Revelation says the mountains and islands are lost. You can't find them. Verse 20, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard. He describes it some more. He says it's thrashing back and forth like a drunkard. And it shall be removed like a cottage. In other words, a cottage was a little bitty house and you could just knock it down without any effort. And it says it's like a cottage, it's just destroyed. And the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again. At this time, it's not going to rise again before God comes and takes charge. Verse 21, he says, and it shall come to pass in that day, or at that time, that Yahweh shall punish the host of the high ones that are on high, and the kings of the earth upon the earth. And you remember what we just read back there in Revelation 6? The chief captains and the great men, the mighty men, are all running, looking for the rocks to hide them. That's because it says here he's going to punish the high ones and the kings of the earth upon the earth. Verse 22 says, they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit. That's talking about the grave. They shall be shut up in the prison. That's talking about the prison house of death. And then it says, and after many days shall they be visited. That's the millennium. After the 1,000 years, they'll be visited because what's going to happen? He's going to wake them up for the resurrection of damnation. They're going to be gathered together in the prison house of death, and after many days or the 1,000 years shall they be visited. Verse 23 says, then, or in other words, when they're going to be visited, then the moon shall be confounded and the sun ashamed when Yahweh of hosts shall reign in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before his ancients gloriously. So they're going to be killed. They're left in the prison house of death laying all over the earth for the 1,000 years. And then the holy city is going to come down at the end. The sun and moon are going to be ashamed because the glory of God is going to be pouring out of the city. He's going to visit them then or resurrect them. And, of course, we know the rest of the story. They're going to be destroyed in the lake of fire because they have failed to join the Creator, join themselves to Him by keeping His covenant, keeping His commandments, and obeying Him. This is truly one of the great chapters in the Bible because it tells us so much about the end. And it tells us, verse 5 and 6 is very good verses to share with other people because you can prove to them there if you'll take your Strong's Concordance. Verse 5, the earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof because they've transgressed the Ten Commandments, changed the set time, Sabbath to Sunday, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, if the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate, therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. It's proof positive of why they're destroyed at the end. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy great name. We thank you for these fantastic words and prophecies that you've recorded for us today. We thank you that you've given us eyes to see and ears to hear that we might understand these great things that are recorded in your word. We thank you for your Sabbath and the everlasting covenant that you've made with us. And we ask that you accept us as your children as we do our best to draw near you and that you strengthen and empower us by the power of your Holy Spirit to overcome and be one of your children and be there in the New Jerusalem when you reign gloriously at the end. Bless us and keep us and help us to spread thy word to many others that there may be a great harvest under your honor and glory. In Jesus' holy name we ask thy blessing. Thy will be done, Almighty Father. Amen.